Get ready to raise your vibration with this live transmission. To all explorers, travelers, visionaries, artists, free thinkers, and more beings across the globe, it's time to change our world. What's up, Evolver Planet? Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Jonah Bolt. And joining us, as always, is co-host Aaron Shaw.
Hey, what's up, Evolver Planet? Today's Friday, March 9th, 2012.
And on the show tonight, we have a lot of amazing guests. First, we're having Patrick Hennessy, a.k.a. Colonel Lovejoy, from the Magic Love Bus Tour, spreading light and love across America, magiclovebus.org. And
we'll hear from Cyber Pixie, one of the world's leading female VJs. You could check out cyberpixie.com to find out more about her visuals.
And then we're going to get a Spore City update from Meg Rivers in Colombia.
And finally, an interview with Dr. Boyd Purcell, author of Spiritual Terrorism.
Excellent. And first, let's jump into our first guest, which is Cyber Pixie, the world's leading female DJ out of South Florida. And Pixie, you with us? No, is she? Nope, she's not with us yet. All right, we'll jump into some Evolver updates. Aaron, got any Evolver updates?
Oh, you know, I'm not actually aware of too much going on in the Evolver world right now, but I know. At the top of Reality Sandwich, there's this great new video, the intro to Sacred Economics. It's a little movie made to accompany Charles Eisenstein's book, Sacred Economics, and it's a great introduction if you haven't heard of that book. I don't know what's going on with the Evolver Network at the moment.
Nice. Well, I'll give a shout-out to the Asheville Evolver. We have a big event coming up on March 24th. We got Star Wolf coming to the Firestorm Cafe. And then we have a viewing of Electronic Awakening. We've had Julian Riz, the director, on the show. And Julian Riz actually is Keyframe Entertainment. I'm sorry, the entertainment company that produced it. So we have a screening of that going on. So check out EvolverAsheville.com or .org. And you can also check out our Facebook page. So anyone in the area here in Asheville, that's going to be an amazing event with Star Wolf doing some shamanic breath work. So that'll be really cool.
Yeah, I know also Jonathan Phillips is on his East Coast book tour in promotion of Electric Jesus. So he's got some dates coming up in Richmond, D.C., Baltimore, and Philadelphia. So catch him if you can on the East Coast. That's April 16th through 20th.
Okay, excellent. All right, cool. So with that, I think the station has Pixie with us. Pixie, you there?
Yes, hello everybody.
Hello, hello, thanks for coming on the
show.
Hi,
Cyber Pixie. Hello, hello, hi, good evening.
So let's jump into the most exciting stuff, which is your tour that's going on right now. And tell our listeners about your Dayglow tour and what you got coming up.
Sure, there's a lot going on. Right now I'm on Dayglow tour. It's a massive paint party, electronic music, and we've been going city to city for the last year and a half. I've been on tour. It's been like about 100 shows so far. So that's a lot of good positive feeling energy and massive stadium that's going on. You can check that out on daygrowtour.com. And there's a lot more shows coming up this month. I'm playing Ultra Music Festival. I'm playing at WWE. And I'm wondering, are all of you into the electronic music scene? Or are you all thinking about coming out to these shows in Miami?
Oh, well, I've been to WMC, I think, since it started, before when the Zen Festivals were the original stuff going on. But I won't be making it down there. But to all the listeners out there, it's an excellent, excellent. There's over 500 parties going on at WMC, and it's an amazing time to get down there and feel the energy. And talking about energy, Cyberpix, you're the world's leading female VJ, visual disc jockey, and the stuff you do, the content you use is conscious raising, sacred geometry. Tell us how you got into using that type of visuals and why you do it.
Well, definitely, visual awareness is all around us, and as an artist, we synchronize a lot with the musicians, so it's a whole combined effort. It's really interactive when you work with visuals and music, and you do all these live elements. It's just going off in so many different levels. But definitely, visual awareness comes through messages. There's sublime visuals. There's chroma therapy. There's so much things. There's a lot of work to be done, and definitely visual artists are stepping into the scene and creating a lot of positive awareness through visuals.
Excellent, and I know you've done some amazing things. You've done Pearl Jam, 80,000 people, stuff with Tommy Lee. I mean, your resume is all over the place worldwide. And it's so important right now to pay attention to what's going on with the planet, the shift, consciousness. The electronic music scene is really a scene of awakening. And how do you see the electronic music scene and the 2012 shift and what's going on? How do you see all that, you know, playing into how music is evolving?
Wow, good question. Definitely there's going to be a lot of positive movement through music, and there's going to be all these different cultures that are going to be experiencing some sort of synchronicity in the month of December with all this energy, all these people focusing into this. Definitely a lot of change, but positive changes. So we just have to keep, feeding each other with consciousness and music concerts and, you know, just uplifting things that month. Definitely we have to do things that can unify us.
Absolutely. Well said. Good stuff going on as always.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a lot of events and a lot of new events that are going to be presenting themselves as well.
Hey,
towards the end of the year.
So Cyberpixie, I wonder, you know, I read in your bio that, you know, you first really got into being a VJ and you went to raves in the 90s. I wonder, since your time as a VJ, like, how has the festival culture and the electronic music scene kind of evolved? I mean, is it, do you feel that sense of, like, escalation within electronic music as well as, like, you know, the outer world?
Well, definitely technology has tied the party goers and the artists and the exhibitors just in a whole new different way. I mean, party scene in the last 15 years just has completely evolved, definitely with technology and the music and just having everything be more interactive. And I feel like, yeah, definitely that was like the biggest explosion in the music scene is the technology that ties it all together, if you understand that, you know?
And that's actually how, I thought it was interesting to read that's actually how you kind of made the VJ a sort of like slot of its own in requesting that you be on stage with the DJ so that people understand the visuals come from somebody and that they're in real time. So that's really interesting to know that you pioneered that.
Exactly. Well, thank you. Yeah, definitely. It just makes sense for people to be able to see and see how we're performing, how we're working with so much gear and software, and we're doing all of this in real time. And definitely the crowd has been much more responsive, seeing where it's coming from, that it's not just something you're just playing or viewing.
Cool. So what's your inspiration today? What's your inspiration with this tour?
This tour is called Life in Color, so pretty much it's everything that's beautiful and massive and incredible under the sun. So pretty much it's a life mix. If you all get a chance to see it, dayglowtour.com, there's a lot of videos online so you can see what it's all about and then see all the upcoming shows. We're booked solid all the way until end of May right now, every single weekend, 2-3 different cities throughout the U.S.
Wow.
Nice.
That's what's up. There you go.
Tomorrow morning we go visualize that in Cancun. We're in the whole month we're in Mexico. Every weekend for spring break.
There you go.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Nice. And also, before we go, tell the listeners where they can also get your information, cyberpixie.com, and also some upcoming projects that you're working on.
Definitely. I'm working with WMC, and we're having the 5th annual VJ Challenge. It's a VJ competition, and we have our sponsors, our Pioneer and Motion Loops, and we have a lot of great people that are involved and acknowledging the growth of the visual scene. So WMC is definitely backing us up with that. And yes, cyberpixie.com. That's where they can check out the latest shows, upcoming events that I'm working on.
Excellent. Great.
Cool. Thank you, CyberPixie.
Thank you so much.
Again, thanks again for coming on. And the Evolver Network out there, if you haven't checked out CyberPixie's stuff, check out CyberPixie.com. Check out her YouTube videos. She's doing amazing work spreading awareness and raising consciousness everywhere. So we thank you for doing that. And thank you for coming on the show, Pixie.
Thank you so much for the invitation. Talk to you soon.
Excellent. Have a good night. Take care.
Have a great, wonderful night.
All right, with that, we're going to jump to our next guest, and they're actually live here with me here in Studio B in Asheville, North Carolina. And these two special guests I met recently, about 2 weeks ago, and come to find out that they are taking the Magic Love Bus across the country, spreading awareness, light, and love, as most of us are doing these days. And it's an amazing project that they're doing, so it's really great to have them, Patrick and Laura, in the studio here. And with that, thank you guys for both coming to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So first, let's jump into what the Magic Tour Bus is, what you guys are doing, and how it derived from the early 70s and hippie days.
Well, if you go way back, there was, of course, the famous bus further that was voyaged across the United States, with its crew of merry pranksters and Ken Kesey leading the band. And, and that was chronicled in the book, The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test. And, in reading the book a long time ago, I thought it was pretty fascinating how in a lot of ways they really did make changes that affected the whole culture of the 60s, the idea of kind of transcending the norms and going beyond that. Of course, they had a tool known as acid, and that was what
the
Kool-Aid acid test referred to. And now, years later, Scotty Miller, who's a friend of ours in San Francisco, created a bus that's become known as the Magic Love Bus in the Bay, and it's been well-loved. It's been leading every love parade that San Francisco's ever had. Real well-known at the festivals, and now, in a lot of ways, it's kind of a reincarnation, and what we want to do is go across the land, but instead of dosing people, what we want to do is really share love and light and have people come together on a heart-based connection of all stripes and politics and colors, and really have the bus be a platform for connection, for heart consciousness change, and share food and have people connect with themselves and connect with other people and come out and unplug from the cities and come out and get tribal and dance around the fires and have ceremonies and make music and really get away from all those distractions and all that programming that we get through TV and the media and really connect and find out what our truths are and share those just as we share food and dancing around the fire from coast to coast.
Absolutely, amazing work, guys. You're going to be feeding people organic food, and you're going from coast to coast, stopping in multiple cities, basically bringing awareness and conscious raising ceremonies and whatever it is, music. And I know the bus is retrofitted with a new sound system, and it can hold 40 people just on the rooftop alone. And it's amazing stuff. And Laura, how did you first get involved with the Magic Love Bus?
That was also on Revolution on the parade in San Francisco. And now the bus has its own like stage on top of it that has been retrofitted in. And now we can have that that same experience going all the way across the country. Kind of like a love parade that just keeps going. And mostly what we want to do is connect with each other and connect out there and help people to connect with themselves, with each other and the earth that we live on. Mm-hmm. And that is the most liberating experience that we can have, is to have that connection to the love that we can share, and to the love of the earth, and to the way that, you know, we get our food from the earth, we get our water from the earth, we breathe right here. This is the most basic connections, and to just really get in touch with that.
Yeah, it's so important right now with what you're doing. Just you guys being out there is raising vibration and consciousness. Just by you guys being in the places in different cities is going to help elevate consciousness. The bus itself is amazing. It's purple. You can't miss it. It's looks like a futuristic time machine. It's amazing, and I'm sure you guys are going to have a blast. And what are some of the things you wish to do after the tour is over? I know you have like a social media site going. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think the bus, the bus is really inviting. You can't even pull into a gas station without trying to crowd it. There's always a party that breaks out on the bus. So I think it has a lot of magnetism, and I think it's going to bring a lot of people together in different places. And in a lot of ways, I think the journey is going to be very much a collective, collaborative journey. And we really need the help and input of a lot of people to get it rolling. But once you get on the bus, I think there's a lot more under the hood, too. We do have two websites, one of which is themagiclovebus.org, and there, amongst other things, we have our map and the bus schedule of where we're going, which is mostly through the Southwest, and through the Gulf, and up into Asheville, and then up the East Coast. We also have the Lovolution Solution, which is a social network that we've just created. It's brand new.
Excellent.
And it's basically a place where people can go and connect when they're not on the bus, and to share ideas and whatnot. And I do think that will live on after this bus journey, and I think it'll get some momentum from the bus journey as well. And I think it'll turn a lot of people on to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hey, so are you guys going to be documenting your different stops, or how is this a collaborative sort of ride? I'm sure you've touched a lot of people and opened a lot of minds. I just wondered if you're going to be filming or recording any conversations or recording how people respond to the bus.
Absolutely. In fact, that's one of the nice advantages we have now in, you know, 2012, is we've got live streaming video. We're going to put webcams all over the bus, and everybody that steps on is in the movie. And we want to interview a lot of people. I really want to find people along the way and ask them whether they're in the Bronx in New York or in a small town in Texas, you know, how is your life going? And what kind of world would you like to envision? And get people to contemplate the idea of what kind of world do we want to co-create? And I think it'd be great to share interviews with people along the way and put that out there. And of course, the festivities that go on, we'll want to share that, and people can amp that up far and wide. But I think it's going to be a real collaborative process. A lot of the route is not really all that firmed up. We really need help from people out across the Southwest, all the way to the East Coast, and up the East Coast in particular, to help us identify groups that want to get together. Some of it may even be a bit political. Maybe we want to go to the Gulf and we want to do a healing ceremony and find groups that want to do that. We want to find people out, say, outside of Vegas that want to do tribal dancing and get together and make music, or go right up the Vegas Strip and, you know, have a big sign that says bet on yourself, you know, and just do a little bit of Easterism too. and meet some interesting characters and have them be a part of this. But we will document it all and shoot a lot of video and probably make a movie when it's all said and done.
Wow, we've got to connect you with the Evolver Network.
That's exactly what I was thinking, Aaron. You're talking to the network right here because there's sports cities all over the country, and once this broadcast gets out, we'll be doing some posts ourselves, and the Evolver family is where it's at.
Well, we'd love to promote the Evolver Network. In fact, that's really what a lot of what we want to do is just draw attention to different organizations that are already doing great work in books and movies. We have dozens and dozens that we're compiling, and the resources page on the bus and on the LoveEvolutionSolution.org are open. There's a button you can click and you can submit resources that are about expanding your consciousness and expanding your heart and inviting people to do that. And the Evolver Network to me is awesome for that. I've loved reading Reality Sandwich and Daniel Pinchbeck's work, and we'd like to get to know Jonathan better and see what we can do collaboratively to kind of cross promote each other.
Absolutely. Definitely, we can help plug you in with that. That's for sure.
Awesome.
Aaron, did you have any more questions?
Man, I'm just really fascinated looking at your route. I can't wait to connect you up with some of the interesting characters who have spent plenty of time envisioning the next world they want. So, awesome. Best of luck to you guys.
And I'm sure maybe you guys would be out in the Los Angeles area. We could definitely do an update. Maybe this time, Aaron, they can come and you could do a broadcast from where you're at with them.
Live on the bus with the party.
Live on the bus with the party. That even better idea. That'd be amazing.
Wow.
Cool.
Yeah, let's do a ceremony on the beach. Maybe Venice Beach or a place like that. We're still looking to make a connection in the LA area. And then we want to invite people to go to Joshua and get out of town a bit.
Aaron, are you ready for the Magic Love Bus?
I think I am, yeah.
Are you ready to get on the bus and get on board for the Lovevolution? You're already on board, aren't you?
Oh, totally, yeah. But I mean, I actually want to be on the bus for a little while. So it couldn't hurt.
We can arrange that.
Excellent. Yeah, that'd be great. And the whole time you'll be able to track where you guys go and stuff to the website, correct?
Yeah, yeah. Originally, we even had a feature that had a GPS that would tag you at all moments. And then we thought, wait a minute, what if it's 3 a.m. and we're in the desert? You know, we would like to sleep occasionally. But yes, there is a map that has all the different stops tentatively planned. But we really do need a lot of help from people too. Come forward and collaborate on events and think of the bus as a platform. It's a vehicle for change and for whatever things are going on in your community, whether it's a political action that's going on about fracking or whatever the issue is, we're available. We want to work with different groups that are trying to do good things in the world.
Wow, that's what's up. I just got chills because what I got chills about was this is amazing. People are listening out there, Evolver Spores. This is a mobile party conscious raising bus that has a platform that holds 40 people. It's got a sound system. I mean, contact them, check it out, or contact me and Aaron. We can definitely hook you guys up and have a party, have an Evolver Spore group on the Magic Love Bus. Put a DJ on the roof. I mean, get a band on the roof. You plug into a sound system. This is a mobile love mobile going across the country, and they're looking for more people to get involved. So, guys out there, check it out.
And so you're embarking April 14th, is that right?
Absolutely. We're going to cast off from Ocean Beach in San Francisco near the Golden Gate Park, and we're going to do a fire circle and drumming, and who knows, some of us will probably dive into the ocean and do more than put our feet in it and create some intention, you know, to set some intention for what we want to do, and really have this be a transformational experience for everybody involved. We all change in some ways that we probably can't even imagine now in the experience of this.
Absolutely.
Great.
And quickly, before you guys go, what was your sort of first awakening to something was greater, love needs to be put out there now? What happened in your life where you said, listen, we just need to go on the road and put out love? Because something must have happened where just one day you were like, you got the call and that's what you had to do.
Well, for me, it starts a long time ago in my world, just like beaming love and feeling love. And then our love kind of inspired this practically. And actually Patrick's love for having a lot of people come around and get together. And then suddenly we just felt the wealth and abundance of our own love. And we thought, we could share this with a lot of people. And then the love parade, you know, was very inspiring. But it took us going through the winter, and then in the spring we kind of like, wow, we could actually do this. And then he is a dreamer and a manifester too, so him and Scotty getting together, wow.
Yeah, wait till you meet Scotty, the magic trip meister. I mean, he is, you couldn't script a better guy for this. He is phenomenal. And a lot of fun. He is the host, is the most, as far as getting on the bus. And as far as me, you know, I lived a nose to the grindstone existence, and I have to credit a lot of an awakening for me was going to Burning Man and really having an experience where I had saw so much beauty and so much of people interacting instead of transacting, and so much unconditional acceptance and so much beauty on so many levels that it kind of cracked me open. And I had first tears I had ever had as an adult, and I was like tears of joy, and also tears of realizing all the years I've been living behind a wall, and how I had been holding myself back, that I had heart, but I didn't really share it with the world. And so ever since the wall cracked, it's been a process of taking more bricks down.
That's it.
You know, and opening up. And for me, this bus journey is a stretch. You know, I jokingly invite people on when they sign up for the Lovolution Solution to pick a Lovolution name, who they really want to evolve into becoming. And me, I picked Colonel Lovejoy. You know, people laugh when they hear it. And it's a real stretch because, you know, there are days when I'm more like Colonel Killjoy, you know. But it sets that bar for me that I want to do things with love and joy. And that is something I want to really strive to do on this journey in the bus.
Nice, excellent. So again, check out the website, themagiclovebus.org, and the social media site is...
Well, we do have some things on Facebook for activities. There's a community there and a group. But the one that we have for our own group is the lovolutionsolution.org, where you can join as a member and participate and share ideas on where you think we should stop and what we should do along the way. Very open to that whole collaborative process.
Absolutely. Well, I think me and Aaron definitely will need to plug you into to the network here, and we have tons of cities we could send you to.
Oh, yeah.
Some truly far-out people on this show, for sure.
Absolutely. And real quickly, you mentioned Burning Man, and Jonathan was just on the last show, Starsea Energy, and he talked and mentioned about Burning Man, where that was sort of his experience as well, where he saw shapeshifters and you know, things that he couldn't tell his brain anymore that he didn't see. And when you see things like that and you can't tell your brain anymore that that's not true, and you know it is and it resonates with you, the bricks start coming down. So to all the burners out there, lots of Evolver spores and people listeners are burners, and for the ones that aren't, check it out. 55,000 people in the desert, leave no trace. And amazing concept, and the whole world should be like that, and I think we're gonna be like that soon.
Yeah,
sooner than most people think.
And apparently the aliens are showing up now.
Yeah, they've been showing up for a long time. I think that during this shift, it's going to be more of the humans coming to terms that we are the real ETs.
Yeah.
And we're the ones we've been waiting for the whole time.
You know what I love about Burning Man is that the term, and I didn't get it at first when I was there, but the default world. The idea that the world is static and we live in this place and that's the way it is. And then you go to Burning Man and you realize, oh my God, we created this. This is possible. I mean, granted, it's for a week, but it's kind of mind-blowing to think, wow, people can be like this together. Why can't that be the way it is in the regular world?
And that we can create any world that we want.
Absolutely. Constantly co-creating our reality. And with that, guys, thank you so much for coming on. Aaron, did you have anything else?
No, we'll be sure to connect. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, excellent. I look forward to meeting you in L.A.
Yep.
Great. Yeah, you guys, thanks for coming in. And we'll also be periodically checking with you guys, giving us updates. And definitely we'll try to link you up with some people from the Evolver Network and do some live broadcast from different sports cities. That'd be amazing.
Awesome.
Cool. Yeah. All right, great. And with that, we're going to take a quick break and listen to some Arabian Night mix. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Dr. Boyd Purcell. So here you go, Arabian mix. Evolver Planet Radio, and again, that was an awesome interview with the magiclovebus.org. That's going to be an amazing stuff. So all the sport organizers and sport listeners out there, check it out. And now joining us on the show, we have Dr. Boyd Purcell from HealingSpiritualTerrorism.com. Dr. B, thanks for coming on.
Thank you. It's been there, John.
Excellent. Now, first, for all the listeners that don't know your book or aren't familiar with your first book, Healing Spiritual Terrorism, give us just a synopsis quickly of the book and how you came about writing the book from your own experience.
Well, I came about writing it because I was spiritually abused, actually spiritually terrorized, as a child growing up with a very fearful view of God and the penalty of eternal damnation for a lot of different kinds of sins and a lot of legalism, I call it, where you can't smoke, you can't drink, you can't play cards, you can't go to movies, you can't dance. All those things are Christian legalism that you go to hell for, and that was literal fire forever. And so it's just a very terroristic thing. But then I grew up finding out I'm not the only one who has been spiritually terrorized. There have been tens of millions of people who have been. And I became a minister, and I was going to seminary. Of course, I went to college and got a bachelor's degree and then a master's degree in counseling and master divinity and later doctor of philosophy and the integration of psychology and theology. And I became a hospice chaplain. And I spent 14 years doing that and ministered to hundreds of dying patients, almost all of whom told me that they were trying to be Christians. Some said they used to be Christians. They weren't sure that, almost all of them weren't sure that they were Christians or they'd lived life well enough. to earn admission to heaven. They didn't understand the doctrine of salvation by grace. So they're living in terror every day, fearing that they're going to meet this tyrannical God who's going to judge them, condemn them, and throw them into the eternal fire, wherein they'll be tormented day and night forever and ever. So that's why I wrote the book after I retired from the hospice chaplaincy, Spiritual Terrorism. The subtitle is Spiritual Abuse from the Womb to the Tomb.
Wow, and it's amazing, you know, that your experience came from firsthand of watching, you know, people lying on their deathbed and being so afraid to die because they didn't think they lived a good enough life, and it's mental torture your whole life to be programmed like that. It's horrible, and to be sitting in hospice, I mean, it must have just broken your heart to see one after one after one just scared and fearful when, you know, they should be at least restful or peaceful in a state, you know, accepting that they're passing on, because when you pass on, there is another side, and it's not something to be fearful of. Right. So, and with the book out, what kind of response have you received since the book has been out this last year?
Well, there's been a fantastic response. Let me say this, that one would think logically that if one's religion is worth anything, it should be worth some comfort at the end of life. But I find out the opposite is often true, that it increases the fear and the terror, fear of dying and meeting this tyrannical God. Because when you're young, you kind of put those negative messages on the back burner, back of your mind. But as you get older, you get to midlife, you get maybe sick, you get a terminal diagnosis, then you're going to meet this tyrannical God very shortly. Then it can be a very terrifying thing. So I've had a lot of great response from my book right now. There are 28 reviews on Amazon.com, and 26 of them are five-star ratings. And it's gratifying that people are not just reporting, reading the book and enjoying it, but they are finding peace with God, peace of mind, healing for damaged emotions, and joy of living. And I can give you two or three examples if you'd like for me to do that.
Sure, give us some examples.
Well, there's one, the fellow from Australia emailed me to say that he had been the caregiver for his father, who was a hospice patient. His father was a good man, but not a Christian. And this fellow had grown up in the Christian church and had heard all his life that unless you are a Christian, then you will get burned in hell forever at the end of life. So when his father died, he became so depressed, thinking his father being tormented forever in fire, that he became so depressed he became dysfunctional. So he had to be admitted to a psychiatric hospital. So in the hospital, he told the doctors the source of his dysfunctionality, and they medicated him. He got some talk therapy, and then he was discharged with instructions to do deep breathing exercises and to meditate. Well, Jonah, what do you meditate when you imagine your father's being engulfed in flames forever? So he was still very depressed and becoming dysfunctional again. So I said, well, how in the world did you get my contact information and my name way down under from Australia? And he said, well, he was trying to think of words that would describe what he had been experiencing, and two words came to mind, spiritual terrorism. He Googled those two words, and my website and contact information came up. He got my book, he read it, and he does not need to be rehospitalized.
Wow. And talking to people, and I've had you on Starseed Energy about a year ago, and talking to people that really have the fear of God in them, and now you're on this mission of awakening because you were a minister, you were in the front lines of dealing with these people living in fear, and now how do you see, like, you talking to people and interacting with people and raising awareness to really, I want to say, like, bring everything together to make it all right. Like, how do you connect with people and explain to people that everything is going to be all right when they've been programmed? Because it's so hard to bring it all together for someone and crack, you know, their programming open to there is a better way. It's not this internal hell. How do you do that, interacting with people? What's your approach?
Well, it's a matter of people being spiritually abused through a literal understanding of the Bible, of the Holy Bible, Holy Quran, or other sacred writing, but the two chief offenders are Christianity and Islam, and that fire is used a lot, but it's in other religions too. And you need to understand that fire is used in the Holy Bible and the Holy Quran and other religious writings in the sense, a metaphorical sense, not in a literal sense. So when people understand that, that's a great liberating truth for them, and they're able to understand that God is not, the fire of hell is not literal fire, and it is not forever. It's for the purpose of purification. So people are going to be purified and reconciled and restored to God, our Heavenly Father. So it's a real use of cognitive therapy. Cognitive is a Latin word meaning to know or knowledge. And when people understand this, it's cognitively restructuring one's mind to be liberated from this fear-based religion. And I am a Christian, but I'm a much different, and people say to me, well, you're a different kind of Christian. Well, I've taken that as a real compliment, because I'm a much different kind of Christian than how I grew up, though I am a Trinitarian Christian today. But the exciting thing is that not only does Christianity teach universal salvation, but every major religion, and all minor ones of which I'm aware, teach universal salvation when fire is understood metaphorically rather than literally. And I address that in my book. Part of it is about, well, first of all, it's basically three major sections. One is the problem, which is this problem of spiritual abuse, spiritual terrorism, and spiritual terrorism is the most extreme form of spiritual abuse. Then there's about a third of my book that covers Christian universalism, and then a third that covers the non-Christian religions. So people find that it's just a real liberating experience to read about this and get rid of all the fear that they've had through all the years. There's nothing, if I'm making sure this example, a woman bought my book and she wrote the review on Amazon, and you can read it. She identified herself as Bonnie Greeley, and she said that she bought the book through a chance encounter with me at our accountant's office, and she took the book home and she put it on her nightstand, and she started thinking, should I read this book or should I read it? It sounded antithetical to everything that she'd heard growing up in the Christian church. And she wanted to read it. She's afraid to read it. She thought about throwing it in the wastebasket. She wondered if it's a Christian thing to do to even keep the book. And she'd pick it up occasionally, she said, and dust it off. And then finally, after 2 years, she felt an urgency to read the book. And she read it in a weekend. And she said, praise God forever. It answered all the questions she'd had for 50 years about the fear that she had of God, because she heard at age 5. That God punishes bad little girls, and you must not question God. So at 55 years of age, she found the peace that freed her from all that fear. As Jesus said, you'll know the truth, and the truth will set you free.
Wow. Hi, Dr. Purcell. I'm looking at your website, and it seems like the emphasis with your message is not really on blaming the people or institutions who inflict the abuse. And I know it's kind of implicit in the term that there is somebody who inflicts abuse, you know, from the womb or the tomb, whether it's something that's perpetuated over centuries or if it's a person in your life who reinforces that damnation and hellfire sort of narrative. But so I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about Christian universalism and a little more about the solution chapter.
Oh, sure. Be glad to. Oh, well, Christian universalism is a term I use, and some people use different terms, maybe just universal salvation or restoration or universal reconciliation. Different words are used. But it means that eventually that all people will come to faith in God, and Christians believe through the Lord Jesus Christ. But the point in all of it is that God is not the cosmic torturer. God is not to punish people. God is going to destroy sin. And there are four biblical definitions of God in the Bible. And so one is that God is love, God is light, God is spirit. And those all sound well and good, but the fourth one is the big bugaboo, which is God is a consuming fire. That's found in Hebrews 12:29. And so God as fire is going to consume the sin in all humanity and thereby purify, reconcile, and restore the whole creation to God's self.
Wow. And so I have another question that's actually kind of out of left field. And that is, it occurred to me in looking at your website that, you know, election season is a time when a lot of spiritual terrorism seems to come to the surface.
Oh, at least, yes.
You know, in my view. So I wonder if you can comment on the role of faith and fear around politics, if there's a relationship.
Well, we have an hour or more to talk about that. I love politics because my undergraduate major is in history and political science, comprehensive social studies. So I'm following the election very closely, and the Republican primary sort of seems to be like a circular firing squad. But be that as it may, it's interesting especially how casually that the candidates talk about bombing Iran. And they have to do this to protect Israel because they have a very fatalistic view of the revelation in the Bible. And they believe that the world is going to end in a fiery Holocaust. And I'm saying, when I say they, I'm talking about those who are a conservative Christian persuasion who read the Bible literally. And they understand that there's going to be a horrible Holocaust that's going to take place. And so Israel is basically a minority of Jews are going to be converted to Christianity and be saved, but the majority of Jews are going to be annihilated. And so this doesn't have a good ending for the Jewish people. But there's a book I'm reading right now. It's called A New Voice for Israel by Jeremy Ben Ami. That's Ben-Ami. And he founded J Street. He's Jewish, and he's very much pro-Israel, but he's saying we need a new voice for Israel because this scenario of very conservative Christians does not end well for Israel. It's sort of like their support is like a Trojan horse. So the world can easily be led into another world war over this issue of Israel and bomb Iran, but sometimes people do not look, politicians especially, at the unintended consequences. But let's say that we do bomb Israel or Iran to protect Israel, but this causes such a backlash in the Muslim world, Islamic world, that say the radicals take over Pakistan, they have a coup d'etat there, and gain control of 100 nuclear missiles, and they nuke Israel from Pakistan. What would be accomplished by that?
Absolutely nothing.
Mm. That's amazing interplay there.
Well, there's so many ramifications of this spiritual terrorism that isn't just something that's a harmless doctrine of the eternal damnation, but it's the basic underlying and motivating force for domestic and international terrorism around the world.
That's incredible.
We have religious people killing people in the name of God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know of any gods that want or wish that upon people. And Dr. Purcell, you're also working on a new book that you said should be out around Easter time. Give us a little preview on what's coming in with that.
Well, I have hope to have it done by Easter. Probably won't be in print by then. I have to find the publisher. But the more excellent reviews I have of spiritual terrorism, the more likely I'll be able to get a major publisher to publish it. But the title of it will be Christianity Without Insanity. And the insanity is the insanely false doctrine of eternal torment, eternal torture. That just doesn't have a ring of authenticity. And the people believe it because that's what they've been taught from the time they're a child. In Christian churches, and whether you're Roman Catholic or whether you're Protestant or other brand of Christian, this is basically what almost all people have been taught. But this doctrine is demonstrably false, just as surely as the grass is green. The sky is blue, God is in heaven, Jesus Christ is Lord. Jesus taught universal salvation. The apostles preached it, and the early church believed it for over 500 years. The doctrine was changed officially in the year 553 when the church's first systematic theologian, the name of Origen, was condemned as a heretic for believing in universal salvation. But Origen had been dead for three centuries before they condemned him. So this was simply a way to rewrite history and say that the church had always believed in the doctrine of eternal punishment. And that's what churches are still teaching today. And most of them people don't know better, but they're passing on because that's what they were taught as children. And so they believe what they've been taught without doing research of church history and finding out what the facts are.
Oh, wow. Yeah. What would you suggest... I mean, I would recommend finding your book, of course, but what would you suggest for somebody who thinks they've kind of suffered under these negative conceptions of God? Like, what is a first step? Because it's not easy. It's not that, you know, imagine somebody who's not secular or spiritually oriented, who is very religious. What's a first step? How do even people even start unraveling that?
The main thing I would say is just be willing to think and to study and grow spiritually. But most people are afraid to, because they've been taught that if you even question God, God may zap you from with some kind of divine retribution and cast you into hell when this life is over. And there's a book that I referenced, End Spiritual Terrorism, that's written by about a dozen different guiding lights of the evangelical world. And they say in their book, and it's called Evangelical Affirmations, these writers say that if you are even a good Christian every other way, except believing in eternal punishment, God will punish you in hell forever just to show you he's not too loving to punish you in hell forever. I mean, it's just really sick theology. So you have to just be honest with ourselves and say, this doctrine doesn't make sense. Is there an alternative view to this? And if you start reading, finding out there are, then it's a real liberating experience. And, you know, there are a number of good books that have been written now, even after my book was published. And there are some older books that have been published more than 100 years ago about universal salvation. But we're having a new wave of books being written right now. I could name some of them I would recommend. And one is Hope Beyond Hell, written by Jerry Boschman. And that book has my endorsement on the back of it, but it is an excellent book. And then Dr. Thomas Talbot has written a book called The Inescapable Love of God. And he's a retired professor of religion and philosophy from Willamette University in Oregon. And then Bob Evely's written an excellent book called At the End of the Ages, The Abolition of Hell. So those are just three, but there are other books that are out. And I'd say Julie Ferwarda has written one about raising hell that's also a very good book.
All right. Thanks so much.
Well, Dr. B, thank you so much for coming on Evolver Planet Radio, and we'll definitely have you back on within the next year or so and check in with see how your new book is doing.
All right. It's good to be with you. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. And with that, let's jump into our last interview tonight. We're going to get a quick Sport City update from Megan, and she is from Columbia, Missouri, and we have Meg Rivers on the line. Meg, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Thanks for inviting me.
Hi, Meg.
Absolutely. So let's jump into, give us an update of what you guys been up to, and how has Evolver helped transform your city?
We have been having spores monthly since June of 2011, and we've done a lot of fun things. Let's see, we celebrate the solstice and equinox every quarter. So in September, we had a big barbecue and potluck for the autumn equinox and had people burn things that they didn't want in the fire in their life anymore and plant seeds for things that they did want to grow. We planted a lot for our spore. October, I don't remember what we did in October. November we canceled, but on December we had a big winter solstice party that was involved with finding joy in the origins of the human spirit, because one thing that we realized that kindred spirits kind of all had in common is that we all were a little bit bah humbug and didn't really enjoy Christmas. So we were really looking for things that we could love about the holiday, and I think we found the joy. We really did. We had a great time. We've decided that every quarter we are going to celebrate the solstice or equinox, kind of the Druid high days with a different religious kind of ceremony. So hopefully we'll get to any kind of religion that celebrates those 4 days each year. And this month in March, we have a private invite-only spring equinox Ostara ritual that is in a druidic fashion that we are doing. So we are also showing Daniel Pinchbeck's film 2012 Time for Change this upcoming Friday at Memorial Union in Chambers Auditorium at 7 p.m.
Wow.
Nice, doing a lot.
Yeah, so are you... Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I just wondered, like, you know, I always wonder about different spores organization setups. If you are the main spore organizer, or you work on a team, or how do you collaborate?
I do a lot of the work. I've been kind of involved with the Evolver since I accidentally stumbled upon it in early 2009, but I do have several friends. I have a co-host that helps me organize every spore named Tara Barnett, and she actually is my next-door neighbor, which is super convenient. And yeah. Also, yeah, I know, right? So lucky. And then a friend of ours named Ron Ribiat, who also helps organize different spores and whatnot. He just kind of started a couple of months ago with us. And various, like, religious leaders that help us, like, the winter solstice spore was more Wiccan in nature, and so different groups of different covens or different churches have helped us along the way. Sometimes we meet at the Unity Church here in town. We generally move the venue every month, but if we don't have a venue, the Unity Church gave us a key, and we have it there. So we have a lot of different people involved. We're hoping that starting to screen the films, we'll get a lot more people involved, and that's why we wanted to do it on the MU campus, because there are almost 30,000 people at MU, so it's a big audience.
Nice.
Cool. And Meg, what are some of the upcoming stuff that you guys have planned and events that you're doing?
Like I said, Friday 16th, we are screening 2012, Time for Change. Later that month, we have an Astara ritual in a druidic fashion. In April, the spore topic is the mystery of dreams, and I think we're going to do something a little avant-garde. We might do a sleep-in. I'm actually have been a dream researcher for some time and have some kind of interesting theories on dreams myself. So I'm going to kind of use the spore as a guinea pig a little bit for part of that. I definitely love to hear about people's dreams and themes that come along. For example, one thing that I found in my research is that often people dream of the dead on the same night. So things like that really interest me. Why does everybody come to work and say, hey, Meg, I dreamed of my dead aunt last night or whatnot. So I really look at trends and things like that. So that should be really interesting. I'm trying to figure out where we can find a place to let, you know, I don't know, 30 people sleep. In May, that is food for thought, I believe, and I'm looking into doing a vegan veggie, I'm reading my notes here, raw food workshop, which we have, we're close to the Central Latino here in town, so I'm going to talk to them and see, I believe they have like an industrial kitchen, and see if they would let us use the space to explore some vegan veggie options.
Nice.
Wow.
Got a lot going on.
Yeah, so you said you started the spore in 2009, or you discovered Evolver in early 2009. How long has Columbia been an active spore city?
Just since June of 2011, but I actually found the network in April, I think, or actually no, April of 2009. And I was looking for an article on the symbolism of octopus in dreams. And I found somebody on Evolver who had dreamed of an octopus, and it wouldn't let me read the article, which was very strange. It said I had to log in, which it doesn't really do that, so I'm not sure why it did. But it wouldn't let me log in with my email, and I never sign up for anything. I'm just paranoid about spam and whatnot. And so finally, I put in my own email, and it was like, oh, you're already a member. And it asked me to change my password. So I imagine at some point I had signed up for something with Reality Sandwich, you know, along the way. I'm not sure, but I was like, well, I'm already a member. That must be a sign. So picked a new password, got on there, and I loved it. So in 2010, oh, it was on 10-10-10. We left at 10-10. Went to the Dimensional Shift Retreat that Evolver held in Boulder Mountain, Utah, and met the founders of Evolver, all except for Daniel Pinchbeck were there. Just to see if it had the kind of energy that we were looking for, you know, because I didn't want to start something without really knowing their intentions or kind of feeling them out. And me and my co-host, Tara Star Barnett, and some friends of mine drove 24 hours to Utah, and the retreat was amazing. The founders of Evolver were everything that I hoped they would be and more. Those people are brilliant. And I really believe in Evolver. I believe in the cause, and we both do. We're super excited. We can't wait every month. One of our Evolver members said it's like 3 months in between every spore. Can we do it more?
Wow, that's so great to hear. What a cool founding story.
Thank you. Thank you. I've got a lot of good stories. So.
Don't we all? Good stuff. Well, with that, Meg, thanks for giving us a Spore City update, and I'm sure we'll have you back on within the next year to give us another update on how things are progressing in your area.
Thanks, sure, I'd be happy to. Thanks, guys.
Yep.
Absolutely. All right, have a good night. And with that, let's just do a quick wrap-up. We got some upcoming guests coming in. Next week, we have a Sports City update from Evolver in Salt Lake City. And then we have Nessie Chenal. I think I said that right. Did I say that right?
I think it's Neshe Chenal. It's a Turkish name. So, yeah, I don't remember what you call the squiggly on the S. I'm sorry, Neshe.
Sorry.
Anyway, she's the co-founder of the Psychedemia Conference.
And she's also a column writer for Reality Sandwich.
And that same show, we'll hear from Mandy Kahn, co-author of Collage Culture, Examining the 21st Century's Identity Crisis, which you can check out at collageculture.com. The following Friday, March 23rd, we'll hear from musical guest Hope Griffin, who we actually rescheduled from a previous show, and an interview with Kristen Ann, author of Exploring Sacred Space.
Yeah, that's gonna be a cool interview right there. And with that, Evolver Planet, thank you for joining us as always. And, of course, check out the Magic Love Bus, guys, because that's where it's at. And I hope it reaches out to Los Angeles. And, Aaron, you could definitely do a Sports City event or party with that thing, because I got the picture here. I'm looking at it right now. It looks pretty sick.
Sure thing, yeah.
Awesome. And as always, check out EvolverPlanetRadio.com. We got news articles on there, the archives, and check out Evolver.net and also Reality Sandwich.
All right. Good night, Evolver Planet.
Good night, Evolver Planet. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be with you all next week.
Let the violence ride, right? Violence. Say something again.